So everyone, welcome to another episode of Rebel City Podcast. This will probably be the quickest hour we've ever had in our fucking lives with the amount of stuff that we've got to talk
about.
It's mental. Where will we start? We start with the COVID inquiry, or
I mean, I think probably the biggest news has been like the Israel Palestine stuff. And we don't cover it at all. Kind of similar to like Ukraine and Russia in the past. Like, we don't really discuss it a lot, and there's a deliberate reason for that, and it's because there's so much disinformation around it, particularly in like Ukraine and Russia. You know, Ukraine deliberately took a tactic to fight fire with fire in terms of disinformation in this recent war. So, like, talking about it is really difficult when you don't trust a lot of what has been said about it. We've seen that in the very early stages of what was going on in recent weeks in sort of Gaza and Palestine. Obviously, you know, Hamas attacked, was it a music festival to start off with?
So I think we're like a month ago. Was it the 12th of October?
There was a
Hamas attack on a music festival, which was horrific.
It was the whole southern border, I think. It was the whole southern border that went under attack, essentially. But the music festival was one of the things going on in the south. But it was like happening, like rockets were going in at other points, and it was a full scale.
Yeah.
Organised attack.
A terrorist attack. I think there was something like 300, 350 deaths. In the aftermath of that, obviously, you know, Israel has exerted its right to defend itself, which you can't really argue against. The scale and the proportionality of that response has been absolutely staggering. Not unexpected, because it's not the first time, you know, a couple of hundred deaths have been met with a couple of, or tens of thousands of deaths on the other side.
How many people died in 9/11 versus the amount of people that died in Iraq and Afghanistan? Yeah. They're in the millions at this point.
Yeah, multitudes of the original crime. And that's probably one of the things that like disappoints me the most about it. Like, I don't want, obviously, anybody to suffer as a result of, you know, terrorism or, you know, the right to defend themselves. You know, we've spoken previous episodes, we were back in the beginning about, you know, my love for American politics and, you know, how WWE is at sometimes. And part of that was as a result of the West Wing. Like, I was really obsessed with the West Wing as a younger guy. And I was reminded this sort of last week or so about a series of episodes where Sheen, President Bartlett, as his character is, has his army-appointed physician who's just had a new baby. And they're, you know, talking about the joys of being a new father and all this kind of carry on over the course of a number of episodes. And it kind of culminates in this, I think he's like a captain or something, being posted to, you know, a hot zone, a war zone or whatever it is that, you know, America, the fictional America is facing at that point in time. And the president says to him, with a new kid on the scene, just say the word and, you know, I'll make this go away. And he's like, no, it's my duty to serve, like I signed up, like you don't dare. Like, take my duty away from me sort of thing. So, kind of goes on, and the end result of that is that the captain, the physician, dies in a helicopter attack. And the president is obviously, you know, devastated, furious. And one of the concerns for the character early in the series is that he was a professor, that he was not a general. He was not, you know, savvy in terms of military and war. And he's trying to make the argument that he wants to, in his anger, go and basically level this country for the outrage of having killed, taken down this American helicopter and, you know, killed this captain. And there's a really, like, interesting sort of series of, like, conversations happening and in, like, situation rooms and all the rest of it where they're basically convincing him that they can't, that's no proportionate, and that there's an actual legitimate cost of doing business for this type of thing, and that, you know, he doesn't get it. Why the fuck not? Like, he'd say something along the lines of, you know, we're the greatest empire since the Romans. Like, why can I not, as the president of the United States, go and just wipe this country out for their transgressions? Mm-hmm. And he's like, because we don't then have any moral authority when we say to another country, you've just committed atrocities, you can't do that. Because they'll instantly turn around and go, well, hold on a minute. You had a helicopter shot down and leveled a country. I mean, there's a proportional response, and that response is somebody takes out a helicopter, you know, they take out an airport, you know, or a military air base or whatever it is, there's, you know, a tit for tat that is like baked into the whole process. And eventually he kind of obviously gets it and, you know, goes and deals with his grief in this sort of normal way. And that's something that I've not seen here at all in terms of like what's happened in sort of Israel and Palestine in the last few weeks, is that, yeah, 300 people were attacked by terrorists. And again, I don't even get why Hamas would, because it's got to be some of the dumbest shit I've ever seen in my life, because Israel now has a pretext to go into the territory and has like waged, you know, war to the extent of like tens of thousands of people now. So that there is no proportionate response for Israel, which I think is something that the international community should be insisting on. But instead what we've got is guys like Keir Starmer, and this has been the disappointing aspect for me as a British citizen, is that, you know, for all intents and purposes, future Prime Minister is out there kind of justifying potential war crimes, especially in the early days where he says we can cut food, we can cut water, we can cut electricity, that's Israel's right. And you're like, that is the dictionary definition of a war crime. Like, and I think he's tried to walk it back. He's had issues with
of course he has.
Muslim councillors resigning and, you know, stuff like that. But that initial reaction here was not a diplomatic statesmanship, was not a peacekeeping. It was about stepping back, throwing your hands in the air and allowing war to escalate beyond control. And that for me, again, was just so disappointing.
Yeah, I mean, as fair play to Hamza for...
I mean...
Do you know what I mean? He's getting accusations of being all sorts, like, in the British press, like... you know, south of the border, definitely. I mean, there's been all sorts said about him. The guy's got family in the region, or had family in the region up until very, very recently. But fair play to him. He's one of the very few... I mean, even, like, we're now seeing the EU commissioners come out, and they're going and they're shaking hands with Israel and stuff like that. And it really calls into question, like you're talking about, like, the morality of the system, you know, like... that actually like runs the world that we live in. You know, there's definitely different parts of the world, like Russia, that don't, you know, don't get run by the same. But in the Western world, Biden's response, the EU's response, the British Prime Minister's response, the leader of the opposition response in the UK has been complete and utter disgraceful.
I mean, Sunak could not get over there fast enough. He has taken a leaf out of Boris Johnson's book with Zelensky and the Ukraine and them being pally-pally and it being a massive boon to him in the polls. And he was on the first flight that he could get to Israel to stand there hoping to get the same kind of political bounce. And it was in no way, shape or form about the protection of life at all. It was about him trying to find something, like we've said in multiple instances to this point, to hang his hat on ahead of an election, or hang his hat on in the, ahead of an election. Like, Hamza Yousaf has been amongst the most dignified international leaders on the face of the planet. Like, not his biggest fan in terms of his, some of his domestic policies, we've been over that. Like, I think, you know, he's taken over at a time when they're on a bit of a downward spiral. But in this moment, when he had actual, like, skin in the game, like, his level of diplomatic statesmanship is exactly what I wanted to see for Starmer, for Sunak, for Biden. I mean, we spoke about the disinformation that happens in Ukraine and Russia. Like, Biden stood on the White House lawn in the Rose Garden in front of the presidential seal and talked about having seen evidence of 40 babies being beheaded, and it was fucking nonsense.
Well, this,
and you're like,
this,
like, what? How the fuck do you know? You're the president of the United States. How do you know? Check that. He said he's seen it. I've seen the evidence. And you're like, that was a blatant lie. Like, why tell that lie? You know what I mean? Like,
well, I mean, we've spoke about this more than a few times, but Biden's a fucking dinosaur. Like, Rishi Sunak is a dinosaur. They're still operating in an age where they're like, these idiots don't know, you know, just, you know, throw out whatever we want to say. What's the message? Throw it out. But we don't live in that world anymore. We now live in an interconnected global world where people are like, well, we're seeing different footage coming from actual people that are in this area. It's got nothing to do with your, you know, to call it what it is, it's propaganda.
Yeah.
You know, like Israel released I mean, the most hilarious audio the other day, being like, this is why we were bombing a hospital. Here's audio of Hamas. It's been translated, by the way, through AI, but here's audio of them saying that they're using ambulances to cart weapons. And it's like,
and this is every expert, been
it's like five audio experts coming out being like, this has all been doctored. We can tell it's all been doctored. And this is now the world that we live in. And these people are dinosaurs. But, you know, like what we're saying, like, thumbs up for Hamza, for everybody else. But Biden, Sunak, they can't come out and oppose Israel. They can't. Like, this is the thing. It's like, Israel, as an opinion, I suppose, and like, obviously, we were talking off mic before about our own sort of personal vested interest. But in my opinion, Israel is there for a reason. They're there for an absolute a reason, and it is to disrupt that bit of the planet so that we can have uninterrupted access to the natural resources that are in that region. That's my kind of take on it.
I mean, it's not created.
Eh?
That's how it was created, essentially. Like, from the sort of towards the end of the First World War, the French split up the region, and then the Second World War, we needed American backing to finish it.
Yeah, I mean, we
spoke. So we gave Israel over.
We spoke in depth with a previous guest about Churchill. And the sort of things that were going on in the background during the Second World War, and no wanting to end the war and wanting to get first into the Middle East, and we want to be the first one here so that we can control this and control that. Yeah. So these we're now starting to see the chess game be unravelled in front of us, and we're like, so you go to, I think in this day and age, I think it's right, and I think you've got to put your hands up and say, I am not a terrorist sympathiser. Like, no. Hamas can get to fuck.
Yes.
Like, civilians, people, innocent people that are in Israel don't deserve to die. This isn't what we're talking about, but what we're talking about is the Israeli government and the military-industrial complex that are and big oil and gas that are now rubbing their hands and foaming at the mouth of the prospect.
The apartheid that's going on in the country.
Because, I mean, some of the response, you're talking about the proportionate response, well, they've been bombing bits that have gotten nae Hamas...
I mean, we need to keep in mind that the Palestinian people at the moment are comprised 50% of children. Like, 80% of the population
early
is
on,
supported by international aid.
That's it. Like early on in this, I mean, a lot of people would like to think that this started in October. Like,
no.
You need a history lesson, but also, like, the average age in Palestine is 19. That's the average age of that population. They're like, they voted for Hamas back in 2005, 2006. You're like, these people weren't born. They weren't adults. Nobody fucking voted for them. They're a terrorist force. And also, if you consider the history of what's went on in that region, desperate people will vote. I mean, the Americans voted for Trump out of desperation. We voted for Boris out of desperation.
Yeah.
So, desperate people will do things that don't make sense. And to be like, well, they voted for Hamas. It's like,
when you're in a country that's been so destabilized over so long, what were your options? Your country's been reduced to rubble. You've been given a slither of what you had. And then it was basically a false peace agreement in 2005, 2006 that was never a peace agreement. It was never a ceasefire, really. There was still shells going over the border from Israel, and I'm sure the other way. Like, it's just, like you say, this whole thing is fired up right now. And it's interesting because I wonder how much we're going to hear about Ukraine over the next 6 months, because typically they don't have wars in Ukraine around this time of the year because of the bloody weather. So it was always going to get quiet. So they need something else to crop up. And it's just, it's all very,
I was thinking about this the other day. I was thinking, like, could you imagine if, when I was sort of, like, thinking about it, I was like, this is so ridiculous. But then I was like, no, but it's kind of what's happening. Can you imagine if a guy, so we'll proportionate right down, a guy from Edinburgh shot five people in Glasgow, and Glasgow City Council went, we're going to carpet bomb Edinburgh.
Yeah.
This is the equivalent of what we're doing. It's so fucking batshit crazy.
I think probably the more sort of reasonable comparison in a number of respects, and again, another topic that I generally don't get into because, again, the history, the religious elements to it, you know, I'm not going to resolve this issue by talking about it, is Northern Ireland. And in the days of the Troubles, had bombing in London as Canary Wharf, and then, you know, nuke Dublin. You know what I mean, like, it would have been
carpet bomb,
probably a fairer equivalence.
Republic Island.
Aye, it's not proportionate, and that's one of my biggest gripes. You know what? There is a history there, you know, in terms of settlements and the legality. You know, the international community has sat on its hands and let Israel away with a lot. And that's not to say that that then justifies what Hamas does. It does not in any way, shape,
no,
or form.
Of course not.
And as I say, we now need to get to a point where, if we're going to have like a lasting peace, and I know people are talking about ceasefires, no, let's not have a ceasefire, because that will just embolden Hamas. And you're like, what the fuck are you talking about? Hamas are sitting in tunnels 500 feet underground, like, sitting this out. Like, you know that's the case. Like, the people that you are bombing just now are overwhelmingly civilian. Like, we were bombing hospitals. You know, the BBC debunked very thoroughly that sort of claim about, you know, they're, you know, using the hospitals as human shields and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Like, there's even, you know, evidence that, like, you know, routes to and from like refugee camps being attacked and stuff like that. Like, this is unacceptable on every level.
Absolutely.
Like,
earlier in this episode, no, the podcast episode, this episode in the Middle East that we're talking about in the West Bank, mm-hmm. Israel told them, if you know, go this way if you want to get out, and then fucking bombed that road.
Yeah.
So, like, I mean, whoever's in charge, Netanyahu, the Israeli administration, they are committing genocide. I don't think there's any way for it to go any other way. And
they're certainly speaking the language of genocide in public.
100%. And to go back to what you were talking about, Northern Ireland, that is one of the very few times, I think, where we've, as a society, we've managed to not just wipe somebody off the face of the planet, or just, like...
But both sides had to gear up a lot of shit they didn't want to gear up.
Exactly.
Both sides had to gear up stuff that hurt like fuck,
yep,
for it to work.
Absolutely.
And, like, what have the Palestinians got left to gear up that will placate what Israel want?
Like, I think that the people, the normal people of Palestine would probably gear up anything for it to stop.
To live in peace.
Aye. But I don't think they'll get that choice. I think, though, I mean, we're now looking at a couple of million refugees maybe heading to like Egypt, and the religious sectarianism that exists in that region amongst like different factions, Islamic,
yeah,
it's so dangerous for
them. Already
so
humanitarian
horrible
crises in, you know, the Pakistan and Egyptian borders with Afghan refugees and stuff like that. So yeah, you're taking an already existing problem and multiplying it exponentially.
Uh-huh. I mean, well, Pakistan, like, there is, have also just expelled 1.5
That's
million,
exactly what I'm talking about. Yeah,
it's, and so, like, it's going to be, that whole region is going to be absolute wildfire.
But don't forget, these people are economic migrants. Like, they're here for your hospital beds,
yeah,
and your jobs. Like,
aye,
like this is. I was talking to somebody, and I don't agree with this, but I could almost, I was like, I can see what you're saying, but I don't agree with it. Where he was like, I feel like this had to happen,
yeah,
because the atrocities that have been happening in that region, well, we just ignore it. We're so normalised to it. We're just like, whatever. It felt like it had to become something that's so unacceptable that hopefully, in whatever time scale that we're
every
talking,
every 5 to 10 years, something happens that we deem so unacceptable that we all wake up, and then we realise the futility of it, mm-hmm, because the people in charge have no meaningful interest in resolving it peacefully. Like you say, you know, guys like Biden was talking 20 years ago in Congress about how if Israel didn't already exist, they would have to create it to protect American interests. You'll get that crackpot RFK Jr. just this week, essentially equating Israel to having an aircraft carrier parked constantly in the Middle East. You know what I mean? Like, this is why, I mean, the American Congress has now elected its second speaker in whatever, 8 months. It's taken weeks and weeks and weeks today. They've on the brink of another government shutdown. The guy they've elected, this, you know, consensus candidate, is a gun-toting abortion nut job who, like, has his own son as his buddy. They monitor each other's pornographic usage. Like, this is like some out there batshit Christian mentalist nonsense. And the first thing this guy does with his majority was not avert a government shutdown in America that protects his constituents. It was to put on the table a bill for $14.3 billion in the, or dollars of aid to Israel. You know what I mean? Like,
aid to Israel?
Yeah. One of the...
Wow.
And this is where, again, that initial disappointment about the disproportionate response and our leaders' inaction or sort of failure to like push back against how overwhelmingly violent and oppressive the response was has now moved into attempts to suppress even sort of wider comment about it, you know what I mean? And that is again something that, and particularly in this country, I find extremely worrying. You know, we've had the Labour anti-Semitism scandal in recent years that's, you know, saw the end of Jeremy Corbyn. And yeah, we don't know really what extent that is actually true or not. There are, you know, pretty strong arguments and, you know, films and whatever else that break down how fabricated a lot of it was. We've seen a lot of that just now where people are equating criticism of the Israeli government with criticism of people of the Jewish faith, and I don't think that's particularly fair. Like, I think we've covered on a number of occasions on the podcast, like, we do not give a fuck what imaginary friend you talk to. Like, what we judge on is how you behave as a person and the behaviour that you condone in others. And I think across the board, you know, where politicians, where leaders have failed on that front. And then you go to America, as you say, they're putting $14 billion aid towards Israel. There's a woman, Talib, she's a congresswoman, she's an American of Palestinian heritage.
Right,
she's the only Palestinian-American in Congress. And she got up and spoke in favour of the Palestinian people in Congress, I think during this debate on the $14 billion. She was actually censured by the House. And like, that's not hugely surprising, given there is a slight Republican majority at the moment, so they can do that anyway.
Uh-huh.
But 22 of her Democratic colleagues joined in and voted with the Republicans to censure a Palestinian speaking up in favour of Palestine in the American Congress. And I think, sounds like a daft one to all raise up, but that, what's her name? She's the ex-porn star. The
Mia Khalifa.
Right, uh-huh.
She was out posting allegations that between those 22 Democrats, they had accepted between $35,000 and like $1.4 million from like pro-Israeli like super PACs and stuff like that. So the reason why they were actually like throwing one of their own colleagues under the bus was allegedly to keep Israeli money coming in and funding their campaigns. And you're like, you know, we're like through the looking glass on this, where you can't, as an actual Palestinian, say this is wrong and I want to do what I can to help my people and stop their suffering, and your own team are like, fuck you, like, don't mess with my money, you know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
That's
what it comes down with guys like Starmer. That's what it comes down, I think, to quite
I think
a lot
he
of them.
Created an anti-Semitism row, and now doesn't he want it to come back and bite him on the ass, because now he's used it to oust Corbyn. He can't then, you know, be on the receiving end of it by not
I'm sure
pushing back on Israel.
Definitely,
you know what I mean?
Like Israeli money, like running through the Labour Party as well, and there definitely will be. If it's in American politics, it will be in our politics.
Mm.
I think for us, you know, like let's move on, you know, like, but.
No.
Suella Braverman's comments about hate marches and try to stoke violence this weekend, while flag shaggers and Palestinian protesters are probably going to meet at some point at the Cenotaph or in central London, central Glasgow. There's protests and,
counter protest.
Remembrance.
Yeah. Remembrance stuff.
I like remembrance stuff. There was something that happened that I wanted to talk about in Edinburgh that.
Or didn't happen
in Edinburgh, where, wrongly, in my opinion, Palestinian protesters or, anti-genocide protesters in Edinburgh confronted a veteran who was there selling poppies. I don't think that that's right.
The Police Scotland have said there's no evidence that happened.
There's a video that they went up to him, so right. They confronted him. That's it.
Okay.
They went up and basically went, fuck off, I think. Was okay. Basically what happened.
I've not seen the video.
These
I seen the statement, and maybe the statement was mere, whatever happened did not equate to a crime.
He said they get punched.
Right.
Or I don't know if he did or if Poppy Scotland or whatever, but it was reported that he was physically attacked by these protesters, and he wasn't. There's a video that's went up where a couple of them go up and they're basically like, I think they're basically like, away you go. Now, like, I mean, during 2014, I was standing on a Virgin Media caravan, and a guy for the Yes Movement was basically like, get your fucking British, get to fucking, and I was just pure, aye, all right, mate. So these things happen. There's idiots everywhere.
Yeah.
You're not automatically some sort of like, you know,
enlightened soul.
Exactly.
Because you happen to be into the same thing I'm into.
100%, and you're out there protesting. I think a lot of people like to think that that's the case, that, you know, but that's no, that's not
group think.
But they went up in Edinburgh, and this is a good, I think this is a good example of, like, basically propaganda, like low level, you know, like the type of stuff where you'd be like, oh, fucking hell, like if it was pre-internet, before somebody's like, well, I've got iPhone footage of actually what happened and we'll leak it online. Before that, you'd have probably just been like, fucking hell, man, they shouldn't be doing that. Where, you know, the guys said that he get punched and, you know, like, he didn't. It's the same with guys like Andy Ngo in America, that's like, these BLM people attacked me, and it's like, no, they didn't. They hit you with a milkshake, mate. There was no cement in it. There was no risk to your life. There was no blah, blah, blah. But this is a good example of how they really twist these types of things.
Big
and
time.
They create these narratives. I also seen that YouTubers and TikTokers were getting emails being like, if you do like pro-Israeli posts on your TikTok and blah, 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 we'll give you money. And they were coming out and being like, look at that. And
was it QXC or whatever his name is? The reaction streamer was doing a stream where he was reacting to bombs dropping on Gaza.
Right. So there was other people. So he's definitely took the payment then. Do you know what I mean?
This guy is one of the most unscrupulous. I mean, reaction content is a complete sham anyway. You know what I mean? But he's the worst of the worst. He's the guy that put somebody else's video in, it was a 15 minute video, he walked away, came back 12 minutes into the video, and then like started talking to his chat, and it's like it breaks every fair usage policy ever. But he was doing crass kind of like reaction streams to like watching news footage of Gaza being like leveled.
Seeing like the days before that, I'd seen loads of people, and I noticed it myself, Arnold Schwarzenegger's Twitter account, Instagram account, you know, all of these high Hollywood celebrities, they all did very similar posts. And then you see, like, you know, TikTokers getting money to do these posts, and you're like, this is just complete narrative control, complete propaganda. And I think that's what people need to wake up. See, if people are just reading The Sun, the Daily Mail, watching the TV, you need to realise that you are getting a complete controlled message.
Yeah.
And go out there and broaden your bloody horizons of like how you consume media. But what I will say is, for my own well-being and my own protection, I turned off all sensitive media on Twitter, because I was just getting so upset at seeing dead bodies on my Twitter feed.
It's not what I'm there for.
It's like,
I was there to laugh. I joined Twitter to laugh at Rangers, not to like watch babies being like torn apart. I think for me, like, I get what you're saying with all of that. Like, I think there are, one of the things that has given me hope throughout it is seeing how many people around the world are like, no, fuck this.
Ordinary people.
Who are actually like tuned into what's been going on over a long period of time, who maybe don't know every ins and out like us. Like, we don't know every in and out. Like, as I said, there is a level of deliberate ignorance that this issue gets to me, because, and like you say, it's because it's extremely fucking hard. Like, we are not going to resolve a conflict that has flared up and existed for, in one form or another, you know, potentially millennia. You know what I mean? In one form or another, that part of the world has been in conflict for one reason or another, you know, as far back as fucking time is remembered. You know what I mean? So sitting, you know, getting any on a podcast like this is not going to answer or resolve anything. And, you know, but seeing other people getting beyond that sort of self-protection and getting out into the streets and actually being like, in their hundreds of thousands, weekend in, weekend out, all over the world, actually like peacefully protesting and trying to force their governments into actually taking the type of action that we're talking about, actually like having the kind of stances that are about peace, that are about reconciliation, that are about actually like reconstruction and like a fair resolution to this issue. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, we live in a world where I think protest has been useless for a very, very long time. It's great to see it on the streets. I personally, I'm not on the streets myself because, you know, ever since like the Iraq war, the governments are painfully aware that they can just fucking ignore you and do whatever they want. You know what I mean? And on topics like this, the government policy does not. The government might change. The government policy on this will not change.
No, you know what I mean? This is an actual like Western global thing.
Yes, this is agreed at every level of governance.
100%.
For the EU to NATO on the way up and down. Like, so a change in government will not change the governmental stance on this. Uh-huh. And I hate to like be negative in that respect, but you know, the people who have went out and actually protested and actually tried to like influence this conversation with their government are to be commended. And like, but aye. They're fighting always in battle.
Britain had their chance with Corbyn and we listened to the wrong people when it came to that man, you know, like he's one of the very few people who have been up for leadership positions, and I'm talking about like UK, you know, different, you know, Wales and maybe Northern Ireland, Scotland or whatever, different kettle of fish sometimes, but he's one of the very few in the last, from when I can remember, maybe, you know, John Smith, or that's actually seemed to have some sort of fucking integrity or some form of fucking morals about him, or finger on the pulse when it comes to certain things, you know what I mean? But what you're seeing is, I think that maybe it's my echo chamber, maybe it's not, but the majority of people disagree with the sort of like, but the majority of people are now like, let's have a fucking ceasefire, let's have a break.
I mean, that's the bare minimum we need to have here, is like, this is people throwing rocks versus people with state-of-the-art AI-guided missile systems. Like, this is, you know, David and Goliath for the 21st century, you know what I mean? Which probably is maybe not the one I should have went with there, but, you know, given the wider context. But you know what I mean? Like, it's... people throwing rocks versus people with, like, missiles. Aye. It's not a fair fight. Aye. And, like, there's the overwhelming majority of people being affected by it are civilians.
Yeah.
The overwhelming majority of those are children. Like, and again, almost everybody affected by it is already living off of international aid. They don't have homes, they don't have food, they don't have money, and now they don't have gas, electricity, or water. You know what I mean? Like, this is not a fair fight. This is not a war. And this is one of the things that bothers me again in the media, is how they talk about the Israeli-Palestine, Israeli-Gaza war. Like, this is not a war. Like, a war has parity. A war is two sides fighting against each other. What you have is a small group of terrorists versus an international country with like a consensus of governments across the world feeding them aid, military aid, financial aid. Like, they have an unlimited ability to wage war on a population that has no way whatsoever of defending itself. Yeah. This is not a war.
Yeah. You know what I mean? People that are backing it up and are either invested in it financially with some of the politicians, they'll be getting funding and blah blah blah, and it's self-preservation. I think maybe ignorance comes into it, but I think at worst there's like a sociopathic element to this, like a proper like evil wanting a population of people wiped off the face of the planet.
Yeah.
Like an ideological nutcase like element to this, where it's like they can't be reasoned with and they won't be told. And I've been seeing a lot of videos about the people within Israel, and people normal people that live within Israel are just as much a victim of this as anybody else, because they, I mean, can you imagine the information that they're getting if what we're getting is like
there are huge swathes of the Jewish population both in Israel and around the world who also want this to stop, like who are also dead against this. Like, so it's not even about, you know, Jews versus Muslims, because, you know, huge percentages of the Jewish population all around the world are like, not in my name, you know what I mean? Like, both in Israel and beyond it, you know what I mean? And that's something that has been extremely encouraging. But yeah, Netanyahu and particularly members, high-ranking members of the Israeli government, the language and the rhetoric that they have used has been that of crazed genocidal maniacs.
COVID. We're going to the COVID inquiry. So, I mean, the first question that I've got...
For one group of genocidal maniacs to another.
I suppose the thing that I think we could kick off with is, why is anybody surprised at this coming out? Like, the incompetence of Boris Johnson and the government that he managed to build, like, he's fucking merry men, you know? It's almost like, I don't know, like, surely, and Dave's new to being part of Rebel City, but we spent... weeks and weeks and weeks.
He must be
weeks
here at least a year now. Oh, I suppose he wasn't. COVID was not.
Spent weeks and weeks and weeks on Zoom sitting talking about the incompetence, talking about the delayed response, talking about money over lives.
Yep, the ideology behind a lot of it.
Uh-huh. And to now see people sort of clutching their pearls at that coming out is almost like you're either stupid or... you're not getting the same information that I'm getting somehow.
So for me, I mean, I do get it, what you're saying, because in the testimony, particularly for guys like Cummings, when we were talking, we were a lot of times speculating. You know what I mean? We knew who these guys were. We knew who Johnson was. We knew the people he was surrounded by in Gove and Hancock and so on and so forth. And we could extrapolate based on their... you know, 13 years of incompetence to this point, that they were almost certainly making an absolute cunt of it during COVID.
Uh-huh.
You know, the PPE thing, and they got to a point in the pandemic where they lurched through one disaster to another on an almost weekly basis, and that has continued up until, like, today, where they just find new rakes to stand on an almost fucking daily basis at this point, right? But again, we were actually kind of like speculating on it. We were taking what we knew about them and the very little actual facts that we had.
Reading between the lines,
we were reading between the lines and actually using a level of brain, you know, like media literacy to be like, well, here's what they said, but here's what we think they're actually saying. I think what we've got now, especially when you listen to like the Dominic Cummings testimony, is that we were 100% right about everything that we thought about them. And that to me is a wee bit like
scary.
Is that we gave these guys no credit whatsoever for being able to like find their fucking own arses with two hands and a fucking map, and we were actually like dead on. Like, Dominic Cummings sat in this inquiry, and I was actually texting yous like at whatever 11 o'clock at night after watching it, being like, fuck me. Like, this guy, the balls on this fucking cunt, by the way. Like, honestly, he's walked into this room. He basically walked in and was like, I used Brexit to put myself at the centre of government, and then I surrounded myself with idiots that I could bully, including the Prime Minister. And then the pandemic hit, and nobody anywhere was prepared for it, because I had put them there to facilitate my vision of Brexit, not to manage a pandemic. So, and he's like, I just basically hung it round their neck and fucked off. And you know what I mean? Like, it was staggering. Like, the actual audacity of the guy was just on a whole other level. And I was talking to you using the text up at the time, and I was like, this guy's a fucking Bond villain. So he is, like, mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, but it was incredible to me that to have it not just confirmed, but to be like, it's not just as bad as we thought it was. It was actually, like, worse.
Uh-huh.
It was even worse than we thought.
Uh-huh. Myself in a weird position with Dominic Cummings, because I feel like he's a deplorable character.
He is.
His politics, like what he's done with Vote Leave, Cambridge Analytica, like, I don't agree with any of it, but the, like you said, the balls, the absolute balls, and it's almost like he's went, you know, like, you want to see behind the curtain that what happens in Westminster and governments, like,
yeah,
here you go, you can see it all, like, and he's just went, have it all. Whereas we've got a prime minister who's like, oh, you know, I don't have that iPhone anymore, and they're on sort of self-preservation mode. This guy's just went, I mean, it doesn't look like he's trying to preserve anything. I don't know if he cares about his career or
no,
what
I think his career's over, like, in that respect. I think he's going to be somebody who is in the background practicing the dark arts forevermore. He'll be a consultant, nameless, you know, consultant number one from whatever company he winds up at. You know, there was an element of he was trying to, like, burn the house down on the way out the door. You know, Shep had made a point, oh, you know, I can appreciate his honesty when we were texting back and forward during the week. And I was like, his honesty is extremely selective. Like, he's been incredibly honest about what other people did to make mistakes and what other people did wrong. And then when you watch, like, the section of his testimony on, like, Barnard Castle?
Uh-huh.
He's like, I moved to Durham from London, so like Newcastle, I moved to Newcastle for London in the middle of the pandemic with my wife and child. And I told the Prime Minister about it, and then the KC who's doing it is like, well, hold on a minute, I've got a section WhatsApp between the Prime Minister and, like, let's say Matt Hancock or whoever the fuck it was, right? And somebody's like, why is Cummings in Durham? And Johnson's like, aye, so he's apparently moved to Durham. And he says that he told me that just as I caught COVID, and that the reason I don't remember it is because I was lost in the fever of COVID. And, like, Boris Johnson is basically like, this motherfucker was gaslighting me, like, whilst I had COVID and fucked off. And then, you know, he's talking to him about, was the drive necessary? And he's going, the drive on what day? And, you know, he was
getting
so
very
evasive,
pedantic about his own shit.
Every time the KC asked him a question that was not about somebody else, he was always trying to reframe it and recontextualise. Well, what I think, the question I think you're asking is, and the KC's like, dude, I'm, like, one of the best lawyers in the country. I know what question I was asking. Now answer it. And he's going, well, actually, in this context and in that, and you're like, he was so evasive on what he did. Other than that initial statement where he came in and went, I set this up to facilitate Brexit, and the minute the pandemic happened, the whole thing just went straight in the bin. Like, that's the only bit of real, genuine honesty we got from him. The rest of it was like, Matt Hancock did this, and Theresa May did that, and Boris Johnson did this, and he's like, telling tales out of school to, like, you know, grass everybody else in and hopefully buy yourself a level of cover, because he's been out of the game so far now that the press, they're not running with Dominic Cummings said headlines. They're going to be like, Boris Johnson did headlines and Boris Johnson did not headlines, you know what I mean? Like, and that's what he's feeding them. He's still feeding them the line the same way he was feeding them the line when he was in the room, you know what I mean? Like, so he is like a world-class political operative in a lot of respects. Like, he's ironically, like, I was watching him and I was just like, this guy is actually Malcolm Tucker. Like, this is, even though Alistair Campbell is actually Malcolm Tucker, you're like, there's clearly more than one of these, like, just political monsters in the process, you know what I mean, where it is about their grandiose kind of thing. And I think at one point you did say, oh, but was this guy's trauma? This guy's trauma was that his position in life never matched his opinion of himself. That's the only trauma that Dominic Cummings has ever experienced in his life, is that the rest of the world doesn't think that he's as awesome as he thinks he is. And, like, that's genuinely where my opinion on him is.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, and these sort of, you know, conversations that he had during this inquiry very much just back all that up for me, because, as I say, it was everybody else did this, and actually, you know, I wasn't really that bad. I only, like, broke protocols and lied to a prime minister and set up the entire government to eat with my hand and then fucked off in the middle of a worldwide crisis. You know what I mean?
I would like to know more about him that isn't, you know, Benedict Cumberbatch making him likable. You know, like when I watched that, I can't remember what it's
Channel
called.
4.
Yeah, you were almost like, he's almost likable, and it's like, I don't find him likable at all. Like,
no. I love the one where they were like, so the culture you created at number 10 whilst you were there was so toxic that work could not possibly be done effectively because people were either terrified of you or not interested in cooperating with you in any way, shape or form. And he was kind of like, maybe. And like, well, actually, here is some evidence of you being a rampant misogynist to this female minister. Uh-huh. And he actually like stops the guy and is like, no, hold on a minute. I think that there is basically as much evidence, if not more evidence, in me being a bigger cunt to men than to women. Uh-huh. So I don't think that it's fair to call me a misogynist because I'm basically an equal opportunity cunt to everybody.
Uh-huh.
And you're just like, who the fuck goes into like a government inquiry and is like, no, I was not just a cunt to women.
Yeah.
I was a fucking horrible bastard to just everybody. Yeah. I was fair. You know what I mean? And it has had that as like his justification is that I was horrible to everybody. Aye. So what's the problem? It's, you know what I mean?
He is the face of the Tory party, basically. Like what he does, what he stands for, he is like the true voice of what it actually goes on, in my opinion, behind those closed doors.
Yeah.
And that's what I meant by the honesty. It's almost like when you say about lifting the veil, yeah, and seeing a bit of a crack behind the door, it's that
well, now we
that
know.
I now that we now see it. But we also saw it in the messages and all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
They do. They see us, they see they're elitist. They see the poor and the vulnerable as just numbers on a board. Well, like they don't give a fuck.
I mean, the mental gymnastics to come to the conclusion that COVID-19 was nature's way of dealing with old people is like, as a cognitive behavioral therapist, I'm like, that is like ninja style, like to actually just
Olympic gymnast levels of flexibility. Uh-huh,
like to come to some sort of thought that makes you feel good about the fact that you've just let, you know, what ended up like tens of thousands of people die deliberately because like through the inquiry we're finding out that they knew exactly what was going to happen,
yeah,
when they put elderly into the care homes. And
yep,
at the time they were told exactly what was going to happen and they did it anyway. Mm-hmm. And that is the way that Boris Johnson, that shows you the level of delusion and narcissistic thinking that a guy like Boris Johnson can actually achieve.
Yep.
And how, like when people are like, how could they do that? Because their thinking is so distorted that they can just be like, well, this is God's will. You know what I mean? And like,
well,
that,
there's one of Johnson's aides who was in after Cummings basically said that when Cummings was binned and told to go and sling his hook, that the only person that Johnson would listen to was his wife, Carrie. So like, she was basically the de facto prime minister when Cummings stepped out because he was so dependent on Cummings' direction that he couldn't think or act on his own behalf because he's a fucking idiot, like, and I mean an actual imbecile, a human being. Uh-huh. You know what I mean?
But
like,
this is what doesn't
and his wife stepped in and was literally like, you should be doing this, you should be doing that, you, yeah, should be doing the next thing.
The fact that Boris Johnson's an imbecile is not a secret.
No,
but the fact that his wife, who's not an elected politician, and I suppose the aides aren't elected, and blah, blah, we get into that, but the fact that his wife's basically like sitting, probably like while he's like in the other side of the bed, like, I don't really care. Like, can you just, what would she do here for her to be like, do this, and is wild to me.
Aye.
Absolutely fucking wild. Yep. Do you know what I mean?
And then you get to guys like Hancock, who everybody in Westminster has just been beaten with a shitty stick. And, you know, he clearly deserves it. It comes to his testimony, you're watching it. And yeah, one of the most, if Dominic Cummings was evasive, we need to invent a new word for what Manhattan was, because I don't think, and I think the section of testimony that I was like trying to watch was like 40, 45 minutes online. And I think I got to like 12 and a half minutes where I was like, I literally can't watch. This guy has made this so unwatchable by like just not answering and having any intention
of
answering any question, yeah, in good faith whatsoever. I got 12 minutes in where I was like, I actually can't watch any more of this.
Uh-huh.
And then looked at other, you know, summaries and stuff afterwards and was like, well, I was right to do that,
yeah,
because he sat there and he just blocked the whole time he was there. Never answered once. I mean, I'd be surprised if he even got his own name right. That's the extent to which he was going in there not to talk. You know what I mean? Like,
it's that kind of evasiveness that got him to the final three on fucking SAS survival.
Yeah. There's all
this is what they're going to do. We've seen in other episodes they're going to use GB News and SAS and Strictly Come, whatever the fuck, and, you know, I'm a Celebrity to basically like launder their personalities in, yeah, this period. That's why none, yeah, of them are taking a like re-election this time around, because they know it's a futile effort. Yeah. They're, yeah, all going to get binned. The only ones that are staying, like the Bravermans and that, are hoping that they'll be the last man standing, you know, to what's her name, Liz Truss, hanging about, hoping that when Sunak gets binned to the other side of the election, she'll be able to come back in.
New book.
So the ones that are staying because they think that they'll be the leader or a, you know, a contender for leader of the Tory party once all the dust settles. And the rest of them know that that is probably the dumbest thing that you could possibly want to be right now, and they're all off rehabilitating their image, and Hancock has already been on the celebrity bullshit. Like, you're going to see it now, as you say, Rhys Mogg's got his own show, and this thing's got their own show, and this is now, they've seen the tactic that they can spend the next 3 to 4 year rehabilitating their image with the public via these shitty celebrity-based TV shows, and then in 5 years' time, when the next election kicks off and people are unhappy with Starmer because he flip-flops on absolutely everything, they'll all be stepping back into the fray looking for re-election again. So yeah.
And Rishi Sunak's interviewing cunts while he's in seat in Parliament, so he's almost trying to, like... No questions allowed, yeah, but I'm going to do some
British Prime Minister started his own fucking podcast, like, Jesus Christ, like, sitting talking to Elon Musk, and it's not even, like, he was interviewing Elon Musk, you're like,
I know.
Mate, you're the British Prime Minister, what in the name of fuck are you doing, like?
It's crazy. I watched Hancock's testimony, I watched 20 minutes of it before he's turned up, and there was so much shit that was just absolute fucking horseshit, right? But there was one thing that was, like, I was like, We spoke about this back in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
We said, I remember this specifically, we went, in the future, these cabinet ministers are going to rewrite history.
Yep.
And he tried to do that. So he said, and the KC kind of enabled it. I was like, kind of like, mate, come on, wake the fuck up. They basically were like, there was no precedent for this and there was no actual plan. We only had a plan for an influenza pandemic, no, for a respiratory, I can't say that word.
Yeah.
You say that for me?
Respiratory.
There we go. Pandemic, right? And it's like, well, first of all, my partner, who was mental for a fucking game on her iPhone, I can't remember, was it something IO, like Virus IO or something?
Oh, there's like a pandemic game.
There was a pandemic game, and maybe about 2018, she went down a rabbit hole.
Yeah.
And when COVID kicked off, she was like, there's playbooks for this, by the way. She's like, that game tells this is like locking down and blah, blah, blah. So that's nonsense. The CDC and the WHO and Obama's government in America had already wrote a pandemic playbook after the back of swine flu, which was a COVID virus.
And SARS.
So nonsense, like, just not, don't believe you. But...
Trump binned it.
Trump did bin it, and we spoke about that at the time as well. But... let's not forget that what he's talking about is March 2020, when China, Italy, Germany, Spain, Ireland,
were all locked down.
So to sit there and go, we didn't have any precedent. You're right, that's true. But the sentence after that of, like, there was no plan, there was no idea of what to do. No, look, what happened was politics got involved, ideologies got involved, wants and needs of Boris got involved, or the individuals and their ideologies got involved, and their donors, and their, you know, like, the Witherspoons of the world, and the guys that own all the commercial properties that are like, get back to work, you're lazy, sitting in the house doing fuck all. No, fuck you, your ideology got involved, and you wanted to bury your head in the sand, like Trump said, this will go away, in 2 weeks we won't be talking about this, it's going to be
celebrating Easter, no bother.
And it didn't go like that, so... We need to be careful that we don't let them away with rewriting the history on this, because they need to be accountable. There needs to be elements of accountability. I think that within governments and stuff, ignorance and ideologies can come into play. But the VIP lanes thing that has been confirmed now, again, speculation, you know, like, we don't know, but this looks like this has been completely confirmed. Yeah. Now that Moan has managed to launder her money through her other businesses and get into the Caymans, they're like, oh, aye, we took $220 million of taxpayers' money for a business that had no right to fucking get it. Well, PPE companies in the UK were standing in a fucking queue waiting to speak to cabinet ministers about, we've already got it. They're like talking about, well, the full world was trying to get their hands on PPE.
We sold our PPE to China and then tried to buy it back after them when it got to the UK.
No, but they've, while we knew this was coming over the horizon because it was happening in China, like Matt said, they went, oh, we'll sell all our PPE. We've got all these PPE in storage. We'll sell it all to the Chinese government. And then when we tried to get into the market to buy it, everybody, you know, there was
like, no, we're actually using this shit.
In America, there was states having to bid to try and get PPE over each other. But I would like to see some form of accountability for this VIP lane and for how they just basically managed to get their pals.
Fundamentally,
billions.
Do not understand how the inquiry process in the UK works.
I probably
if you look
don't
back
no, I don't.
Through the Leveson inquiry and, you know, just,
like, what's
just
the
any
point
inquiry that comes out is that they stand in a room and a lawyer goes, you were a dirty bastard, and they go, yes, I was a dirty bastard, and then everybody moves on.
Yep.
Like, you know, we had phone hacking, we had, no, you know, we were listening charges. To the voicemails of dead, you know, teenagers murdered, and, you know, a couple of years later, the actual initial issue died down. Understand that the majority of the population are probably not paying attention to it anymore.
Yep.
And then they go in and they throw everything at the wall, like they've done with Cummings and Hancock and all that kind of stuff. And you have a couple of weeks in the press where they go, oh, for fuck's sake, this was all happening. And then
it's business as usual.
You go back to normal
and
everybody
the
moves on.
Kicks off and they just make sure that they're following that.
Yeah.
I know to say that the two are in any way, shape or form
no,
connected, but there is always another
something.
Story. There is always something else.
Aye, that's it. Isn't it? It's like people,
but yeah, no,
people
look
will
at
be
any
like,
UK inquiry that on any subject at any time. You know, expenses, all that other shite, like, and come back to me with one that has in any way, shape or form a meaningful result that benefits the British public. Like, aye.
Yeah, we'll be seeing pigs fly.
It does not exist. It is there.
It's
as a, well, we had an inquiry about this 10 years ago.
It's a part of the same system. Do you know what I mean? It's like they're trying to, regulating yourself. It's like, that doesn't work.
No.
You can't regulate yourself because that's what it is. It's just another branch of the government. Who the people who you choose to be on the committees of these inquiries are the governments that are running the inquiries upon themselves.
Yeah.
Like it just doesn't.
Aye, like Sunak sending his end ministers to this thing to testify. Like it's like go and take your hat. We've all got to go. Take our turn. We'll take our hat.
Yeah.
And then in 6 weeks' time. Nobody will remember this even happened.
You'll have an anxiety-ridden afternoon in front of the panel, and you'll have
two days of headlines. Two days of headlines that we control, and then it'll just go away. You know what I mean? And unfortunately, that is we need to come up with something better. This week we've had two that have just come back on like absolutely terrible headings. It's been a rough couple of weeks for the world. I think to be honest with you,
We're well over the hour now. Was there anything, and this will be like an edit point, I suppose, but was there anything about the inquiry that you wanted to...
No, I think we kind of covered the majority that I was aware of.
Just looking forward to the next bits, looking forward to Boris and fucking a few more people at the stand. You know, Witty will probably have to take the stand.
It'll be interesting to see what the scientists thought was going on, you know, because we've seen and heard a lot for the politicians and the... You know, the guys in the background like Cummings, you know, practicing those dark arts. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see what the scientists have got to say about it, I definitely think. But again, I won't hold my breath.
Yeah.